Of course, as you know, tomorrow is Memorial Day, and it is right to remember those who gave their lives defending our nation and our freedom. And that is what Memorial Day is for. It's not a general recognition of all veterans, but those who gave their lives. Lately, it's been kind of confused. I hear people speaking of it as somewhat different than it is. I often think we ought to have in the church a martyr's Memorial Day and not forget them, that great cloud of witnesses that surrounds us who gave their lives for Christ and for his truth, his gospel, his church. Tomorrow we go out to share the gospel at a large parade, and so we need to keep that in prayer. And we will. We will pray about that this afternoon, that the Lord would prepare the way. But this morning we take up a different topic. I want to begin by reading Hosea 4, the verses 1 through 3. Hosea 4, the chapter is 4, and the verses are 1 through 3. Hear the word of the Lord, ye children of Israel. For the Lord hath a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out, and blood toucheth blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwelleth therein shall languish, with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven, yea, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. We love our land, our nation, our heritage as Americans, insofar as all that is good. I'm one that gets choked up singing such patriotic songs as America the Beautiful and My Country 'Tis of Thee. And so it pains me to have to declare the truth that God has a controversy with America. We have spoken of this before, but it's becoming more obvious all the time for those with eyes to see and ears to hear, and the discernment to discern, and the wisdom to know how they ought to act in a time like this. I will tell you, the truest patriot and the best friend America has is the Christian, who is first a citizen of the kingdom of God, the kingdom of Christ, and whose first and principal concern is loyalty to the king of that kingdom, the Lord Jesus Christ, and obedience to him and faithful service for him. Philippians 1, the verse 27, only let your conversation, speaking of our citizenship in that kingdom, be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that ye stand fast in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. No doubt, and Lord willing, we'll return to that verse next week, because we have in mind two messages on the subject we'll be taking up today. But certainly God has a controversy with America for those with eyes to see. I am reminded of what Christ said to the Pharisees and the Sadducees who came and asked him, tempted him to show a sign from heaven. What did he say? He said, when it is evening, ye say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red, and in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky, but can ye not discern the signs of the times? A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given unto it, but the sign of the prophet Jonas, and he left them and departed. Certainly, we know the first application, but we also know that there is an application there to any time, certainly times like this, with all this falling away going on in the church and with what's going on in the nation. But with regard to the sign of the times, then, close to half of our nation is in drought. I was a farmer a big part of my life. I grew up on it. We had droughts. But this is not localized in different places. Close to half of the nation They're speaking of possible food shortages, at least to some degree. Every year, again, I'm very attuned to this as a farmer, we seem to see some new insect and some growing infestation by that insect. Japanese beetles, you realize how bad they were on the crops? The soybeans, the corn? Now they're stink bugs. They're, if anything, worse. And we see a raging inflation that no doubt will get worse. We see supply chain problems. We see huge national debt. We see inevitable recession, more than likely, and maybe even depression, at least stagflation. We see a growing alliance between our two most powerful enemies, Russia and China. Over the past several years, we've seen a new virus, COVID-19. Which took a million lives in a little over 2 years and will most definitely shorten the life of many because of what's called long COVID and the effects of that. You may not have heard, but because of a spread of HPV, human papilloma virus, there's also a corresponding alarming increase in various types of cancer among younger people. This is very concerning. And we could go on and say many other things. And you can't just write it off to, well, this reason and that reason and this reason. Certainly there are reasons with regard to human actions, with regard to some of these things and what's going on. But God rules over all people. And over nature itself. And we need to look further when we see these sort of things going on. And I tell you, there's a controversy that God has with America. As with Israel, there is no truth. Well, there's still truth, but there's also truth being trampled underfoot, including by, what can we say, if we look at the political spectrum, both sides. And we see less mercy. We still see much mercy, but we're starting to hear a lot less empathy from people, a lot more selfishness. Knowledge of God, true knowledge, less and less. Swearing and lying, all sorts of crude language in our nation, even by Christians, in some cases, younger Christians using some very bad language. And certainly, again, by both sides, if you look at the political spectrum. And killing of various types, stealing, committing adultery, which comprehends all sexual crimes, if you will, against God. They break out and blood toucheth blood. And we are a nation divided. And we're increasingly having the two sides being filled with just a contempt and a raw anger at each other. And we're seeing all sorts of railing, mocking, provoking, and lying. And of course, we're seeing a deepening depravity. We're seeing cruelty. We're seeing violence in terrible forms. And so many times children are harmed and hurt and even killed. So we don't like to have to speak like this. But we cannot be as those, the time of Jeremiah, that the Lord condemned this way, for they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. And we have to also warn, as the Lord does in Proverbs 22, verse 3, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Now, as far as hiding, it doesn't mean as Christians we're to hide in a time like this. We're to be the salt of the earth, the light of the world, the city set on a hill. No, we're not to hide. Put that evangelical light that we have under that bushel that's spoken of, so to speak. But there is a hiding from the evil in removing ourselves from it, recognizing it, not being caught up in it, but the simple are caught up. What does it mean, simple, there? It means those that are willing to believe what they want to believe. They just want to believe for instance, that, oh, everything's going to just turn out fine and we can just keep on going the way we are. And the evangelical church in America, oh, sure, there are those apostate churches, but all these new evangelical churches, they're fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And these so-called fundamentalist churches that are really new evangelical with a fundamentalist costume on, you might say, no problem. These world, so pass on and suffer the consequences. You want to believe these things? You want to believe it's fine to go to churches that are compromised and corrupted and trample the Lord's stand underfoot? And it's fine? It's not going to affect you or the next generation? The Lord doesn't see it or else doesn't care? And it has no effect on our country? Oh, it has an effect on our country. And we'll speak on that, Lord willing, next week more. Now, this past Wednesday, I, of course, had the midweek message done, and I turned my attention to this Lord's Day message. And I was going to continue on in our study in the Epistle to the Hebrews, and I wanted to continue on. I didn't want to take up what I've taken up this morning. But this horrific shooting in Texas, I kept going back and forth, work on this message, then I go back to that, and back, and I'm just torn. And I had no rest with not addressing this situation. And so I believe the Lord would have me preach what we're going to be preaching this morning. It's not what I want to preach, it's what the Lord wants me to preach, or so I believe, and time will tell. It seems to be so. So I felt compelled to speak on the school shooting, but not so much on it as because of it, and the vital issues which are raised by such a vile, brutal, unspeakably evil crime and other like crimes. And I hardly know where to begin with our subject today. It's not that there's so little to speak about. There's just so much to speak about, and it's all connected. That's why we have to speak again next week on it. I don't like having to separate a message like this in two and a week between. It's nice to be able to put it all together so we hear it all at once, but we can't do that with this one. There's too much to talk about. Now, we have already had the little children leave. If anyone hears this by recording with little children, they ought to take their little children away from whatever they're listening on, because I'm going to speak more graphically, if you will, than I normally would, and in some sense, even to adults with regard to a few things that I might say, but we have to. Now, we witness this mass murder, and mass murders grab our horrified attention as well, they might, and they create headlines and stories, and that's to be expected. Of course it's to be expected. This one seemed especially horrific because of the age of the victims, of course. But I tell you, anyone not deeply troubled by such a crime and greatly moved with sympathy for the families of the victims, including the four children of the police officer whose wife, a teacher, was among the victims, and then he, racked with grief, died of heart failure. And now those four children are left with neither father nor mother because of this beastly, cruel crime. Anyone not deeply moved by such suffering can only be a self-centered, cold-hearted person. And those that turn around and politicize it on either side or grandstand because of it or try to make a name by grandiose statements about it and so on and so forth are despicable. But here we would just pause and point out that every day, infants, toddlers, and small children are the victims, oftentimes fatally so, of brutal assaults by so-called mothers and fathers. We can hardly even call them mothers and fathers, though biologically they are. Many of them unmarried, just living together. Not always, but a lot of times. Generally not by firearms, but by beatings and blunt objects and so forth. Every day. Such horrific crimes are committed in our country. Every day also in this country, mixed up, confused, brainwashed young children and young adults are horribly mutilated for life by brutes calling themselves doctors who commit the violent crime of so-called sex change surgery. And then there's the mass murder of little unborn boys and girls right up to birth and after birth in some cases. Of course, that alone takes away the respect for life in each generation more and more. And gives them this idea that it's there are times when it is acceptable to kill. If it's for that person's supposed benefit. And we see children and innocents of all ages in large cities who are not infrequently caught in the crossfire of gang violence. Some being wounded, some killed, sometimes in their own house. And then there are those mass murderers called drug dealers. Over 107,000 Americans died last year. Now, using drugs is a crime, and people who use them should be locked up, and for their own good. But certainly these drug dealers are mass murderers. And we could mention the horrific reality of kidnapping and sex trafficking, which is a brutal crime on the same plane almost as murder. It is a beastly, brutal crime, and it's taking place in our country. God sees it. It ought to be a priority to stop it. And so we could go on with, yes, we have these mass murders. And they're here and there occasionally. They're terrible. But we have all this going on too. And it's sometimes really not, it's neglected, except in the area where it happens and then only for a little while and then people go on. But it is the sign of the times. And it's of that controversy God has with America. Of it. It's not all of it by any means. Now, following this latest shooting, the reaction from the political liberal left was predictable, as was the reaction from the political conservative, or more accurately, conservative libertarian now, right. For the left, the mantra was common sense gun laws, of course, with the goal being to eliminate firearm ownership, such as has been done in the UK, where knife crime is now at epidemic levels. Now, I'm not preaching on gun control today. I don't even think that's appropriate to use my pulpit to spend an hour advocating for gun rights or, and so on and so forth. But we make a point, and it has to do with what we're leading to. The real cause of this. So in the UK, they have taken away firearms. So knife crime is rising. It's an epidemic, they call it. In England and Wales alone, I read, just in those two, of course, UK is England, Wales, Scotland, and Ulster. But in England and Wales, there are now 45,000 knife crimes a year, and the total is rising very rapidly. There are only 62 million in England and Wales together, or maybe not even that. We don't have that much knife crime in America. Not near that. They took away the firearms, but the heart of man is still the same. And violent crime is now done by different weapons, including knives and blunt objects. Many experts in that nation, experts, quote unquote, what are they suggesting as the answer to this increasing knife crime? That perhaps they should pass legislation restricting knives from a certain sharpness, duller knives. This is the foolishness of man that is bound and determined to turn away from God and true wisdom and to be a law unto themselves, duller knives. And by the way, did you know, of course, I know you know that other countries in Europe are the same, they're on that same trend as far as these so-called progressive countries. One of the most so-called progressive enlightened is Sweden. They're experiencing a very rapid rise in violent crime rates. And believe it or not, and I read this actually not in a conservative media or anything like that, but just a media that would probably be more some media source. It was probably more liberal than anything. And they were quoting different people. There's a real concern in Sweden that there's been a number of crimes committed lately, and it's rising, using, believe it or not, hand grenades, which are against the law, of course. But you see the point I'm making. They're missing the point. But that's because these who make these judgments, they haven't been born again. They don't have new hearts. And they are so far from the savoring influence of a faithful church. And our country is getting further and further from that every day. Now, for the political right in this nation, including, of course, many conservative talk show hosts, such as the co-host of the most popular talk show in the country, and also many elected officials, the reason for such mass shootings as the one in Texas, Uvalde, Texas, is that mental illness is the reason for such crimes. Mental illness is the reason for all mass shootings. And the answer is involuntary commitment to mental hospitals or other facilities for those who are deemed to show signs of being maybe mentally ill and so potential mass murderers. Now, I want to just address both of those so-called solutions. We need to address them. Perhaps someone might hear this message that would say, well, what's wrong with either one of those or both of those? Well, first, we'll give just a few words on the call for more, much more gun control, with the final goal being really the eradication of the people's right to own firearms. There is a right of firearm ownership which is entirely legitimate. And I say that as a Christian and even as a pastor. Self-defense and the defense of others falls under the Sixth Commandment. Now, we're not talking about glorying in having guns or hoping that we can have some shootout or something. We're just speaking of firearms as a reasonable means. The Lord, of course, expects us to trust in Him, but He provides means. And so firearms are a deterrent for crime, for one thing, and that saves lives, including potential home invaders' lives. I say criminals' lives. There are high crime areas in our cities. These people have a right to have that deterrent and that defense. And farms and other homes in the country, they have a certain amount of danger, I suppose, in this age, this time, with break-ins. And I mean, people lock their doors now. When I was young, we left and didn't even lock our doors, even though we were out in the country if we went somewhere. But now the doors are locked. Certainly the police can't get there within 30 seconds, a minute, or sometimes even 10 or 15. Depends on where the police, you know, the county police are in that big county, often big county. And so, and we could go to the scriptures, but under the Sixth Commandment, it's entirely appropriate to have such a means to deter violence and to defend oneself and others. We're not our own. We're bought with a price. And so we're not talking about going out on gospel ministry armed or anything like that. We don't do that. We wouldn't do it. We're not talking about situations that call for the Christian, and I don't say this lightly, to lay down his life for the Lord. But yes, there's a right and sometimes a need to defend others and self from criminals and evildoers. It's interesting that if someone saves a child in some way, perhaps even using a blunt object or something, they are lauded. Guns seem to then provoke a different reaction from some of the same people that would make that assessment. And then secondly, this may not resonate with people who live in big cities or they live in some of these gated communities and that, but we in the country, there is a need for what you might call defense against wild animals at times. Lately in Wisconsin, was it last week even, or the week before, here in this state, a black bear smashed through the window into a home, attacked the people in there. There were little children, or at least children, I think they were little children in their bedrooms, and the husband and wife fought that black bear and got ripped up to some extent, and the husband finally was able to get a gun and shoot it dead. If he wouldn't have been able to do that, who knows what would have happened to those people and to those children. And in some parts of the country, Americans live where there are grizzlies and cougars. We've had cougars pass through here. We also sometimes have to deal with rabid and sick wild animals. I have had to. And, of course, we could think of the ranchers in the south. West near the border areas, but we've made our and I don't say with animals there, but with self-defense, of course. But and then of course there is the right to keep and bear arms because of the necessary defense in event of an invasion from without or the seizure of the government by a totalitarian ruler. And then of course the lower magistrate should lead the way, and we hope and pray that never happens. We don't speak in some sort of arrogant way about that. That would be a horrible thing. But we see even in the Ukraine a brutal enemy. What are they supposed to do? That brutal enemy is torturing and killing and raping. Aren't they entitled to have a right to defend the weak, the innocent, the women, the children, their own country and liberty? Of course. God doesn't remove that when you become a Christian. And besides, though, and this is what we want to get at, citizen ownership of guns is not the root of violent crime in our nation. We will get to that more and more, but all one has to do is look back. I don't have to go over all this, do I? If we look back, we didn't see that kind of crime, did we? Let me tell you, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. I turned 18 in 1969, August. Guns were everywhere when I was growing up. I was a farm boy, but I got my first gun at age 12, an old single-barrel shotgun, and then a .22. And at 16, I saved up money from working for other farmers when we weren't baling hay at home or whatever it might be, and I brought a double barrel shotgun. I wasn't anything but the norm among farm boys. I had a lever action, an old lever action 30-30 rifle eventually for deer hunting, and I was just typical of the boys, at least in the country, and probably in the towns and cities at that time. In high school, you could bring a gun to school. Well, as is in a case, keep it in your locker if you were going to go home with someone else at night to hunt or something. I mean, I didn't do it because I had to get home for chores, but we had a rifle club. Future Farmers of America, I was in Ag and Future Farmers of America, rifle club. We literally shot guns in the high school gym. We shot for score. We had backstops that were welded together and filled with sand. We shot right in the school. We had something called a varmint contest. And I know this is going to sound awful to some people out here, this, but each varmint had a certain number of points assigned to it. We brought in the tails of various varmints, and if it's a bird, the heads to prove we killed them. Tried to rack up a score. The young man with the top score got a new .22 rifle. I bring this up because a whole several months of that contest, that new .22 rifle hung on the wall above the blackboard. We didn't have gun crime all over. We didn't have mass shootings in schools. And what was the difference? Well, we could look at the culture, but the culture doesn't exist in a vacuum. When depravity and violence is increasing, it traces back to a church, the church that is no longer salt and light, a city set on a hill. That's what it traces back to, and hasn't been in general for a long time. But there is that savor that is left for quite some time. It gradually fades away, but that savor of better spiritual times. But when we were growing up, divorce was rare. Even if husbands and wives of the World War II generation certainly had their share of disagreements at times, I suppose, but they didn't divorce. They weren't selfish like that. I mean, the vast majority, we went to church. Certainly, there were not even any evangelical churches in our area. So we didn't hear the gospel preached, and that took its toll. But at least there was reverence. There was a propriety. We learned the Ten Commandments and such things. We were, at least the majority of my generation, soundly, consistently, as needed, strongly disciplined. We had, again, the majority of my generation, a reverential fear of our parents. And most certainly, we did not talk back to parents or refuse to obey them. That would have brought swift punishment as well. It should. At the same time, we had parents who clothed us, who fed us, who were concerned for us. And did things right, we might say, with regard to how they took care of our physical bodies. And insofar as they knew, if they weren't Christians, they tried to do things right with regard to, for instance, they took us to church every Sunday with regard to our spiritual selves. And we knew they would have died for us if necessary. Now, we were taught. Again, the great majority of us, the work ethic, and to accept responsibility and not to expect or seek handouts. We were not trained to feel sorry for ourselves. We didn't spend time rotting our brains on social media and electronic devices and electronic games, some of them filled with gratuitous, even perverted violence and moral filthiness. Moral perversion was not taught in the schools, neither was hatred and class warfare. And there was a dress code in school. Politicians didn't publicly use crude and even vile language. Neither was it found on television and radio, which both had at least a fundamental moral code of conduct and speech. So, of course, Hollywood was working very hard through the 50s and having more success even, but still there was a code, having more success in the 60s to work sensuality into television. But there was still that basic moral code. We certainly didn't hear the vile sort of advertisements on the radio, which we hear these days. And certainly the sexual perversion now so celebrated, including by so-called pride marches and events by politicians on the left and increasingly on the right, was in the 50s and 60s still a violation of state statute. That had a restraining influence. There was no active seeking out of such persons in such behavior. But the culture in which most children were raised, and then also the frowns of society, to put it that way, caused such behavior to be relatively unknown and restricted to a minuscule few. In the military, such rare behavior as that was a court-martial offense. Now, unwed motherhood and fatherhood was not celebrated. It's not that people were harsh toward those who had fallen into a sin, but it wasn't celebrated. It wasn't encouraged. It wasn't aided, abetted, and funded. And young men were held accountable in the financial sense, at least. We did not have the brutal killing called legal abortion. We did not have the euthanasia of the elderly, as in the is the case in some states today. Voluntary euthanasia. And men were men, and women were women. In most cases, husbands were the head of the family, wives were the heart. Men in general protected girls and women, protected them, rather than abusing them, and certainly cruelty toward infants and little children was all but unheard of and would have brought the contempt of society and swift, severe justice. With regard to the crude language we're hearing, left and right, including by the leaders of both, on the right, Donald Trump. He's the leader of this new libertarian conservative movement. And on the left, a good many people. Some of the things being said publicly in the presence of women would have brought, I'm not saying this is necessarily right, but it would have brought that person a fist in the mouth by a man standing nearby. Not advocating for that. I'm just telling you that's the way it was. Things were far from perfect in the 50s and 60s. The slide was in progress. The 60s were a time of contrast, conflicts, confusions, great temptations, much spiritual darkness. But there was still the savor of better spiritual times and the fruit of that. There was still a preserving effect there with regard to the great mass of society. And those who may have lived for a few years as a young person brought up in the 50s and 60s lived in such a way as to regret it later, as many did, yet in time did settle down, did live as decent, honorable people, not all, and concerned if they had children, family men and women. The revival of the church and a spiritual awakening of the nation is vital. It is essential to keep the nation from descending, really reverting back in time to utter heathen darkness, depravity, and cruelty. It is an incremental thing. It is in progress right now. Jesus said, I mean during his ministry, during his time of humiliation on earth, ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? Wherewith will it be salted? The unsaved world can't savor the church with that spiritual savor, that moral savor that the church should savor the country with. It is therefore good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. There was a great awakening in this nation in 1675 to 1678, approximately, after enduring, actually, King Philip's War. There was another one, as you know, the Great Awakening, it's called, the First Great Awakening in the mid-1700s. There was another widespread awakening, revival of the church, of course, and then an awakening of a spiritual awakening in the world. It's always revival in the church, and then by the church, a spiritual awakening in the world. In 1800, there was a great awakening, if you will, well into the 19th century. Say it continued on. In 1857, there was a revival and consequent spiritual awakening in the land, which began in New York City in the North Dutch Church. Now, we could also think of some more restricted awakenings, really, in the cities, and that is where it took place under Moody, an Arminian who Charles Spurgeon yet respected so much he allowed him to preach in his pulpit. The Lord was using him. There have been many false revivals. The Azusa Street Revival, when was that? The early part of the 20th century. That was a false revival. That was all charismatic. There was another so-called charismatic renewal in the 60s and 70s, supposedly a revival. Of course, it was nothing of the sort. There have been other revivals since. We also think of Billy Graham and his so-called revivals. the nation just continued to slide. Some were saved through his preaching, but he was so compromised, the Lord was not pleased to use him for a great awakening in the country or a great revival in the church. But now it's been, what, almost or over, actually, a century and a half since a true nationwide revival in the churches and a corresponding spiritual awakening in the nation. Next week we will speak of this topic of revival and spiritual awakening. Why have we not had one? What could we do, if anything, to, if you will, provoke the Lord to rend the heavens and come down? What could we do, if anything? And yes, we would say there is something. To be a hindrance to that, an obstacle. Now, in speaking about how things once were, we have, in fact, spoken at least to some extent by contrast, at least by to some extent of how things have become. And this has produced so much cruelty and perversion, lawlessness and violence. But restricting or eliminating firearm ownership, that's not the cure for what ails America. You take away the guns and crime, other than gun crime, will only increase, including homicide by knives and other implements, also home invasions, and such crimes as outrages against women and girls will increase. There may not be such spectacular mass murders, but the sum total of crime will increase, and the suffering and the bloodshed. What then about this mental illness idea? And this idea of identifying potential criminals and then having involuntary commitment of the same based on declaring them mentally ill. The first thing I would say is those who are singing that tune are advocating a dangerous policy. There is no doubt that spiritual and the spiritual and moral condition of our nation has produced several generations which feature many who are emotionally and mentally unstable. And the youngest generation is in the worst condition in that regard. But that's not mental illness, quote, unquote, not what you might call true mental illness, which we'll speak of in a minute. And in truth, there are not a few Christians who are emotionally, mentally, and spiritually unstable. I know that by experience and dealing with some of them. But again, they're not mentally ill. They're not what we would call insane. Now, obviously, if a person is openly deranged, clearly what we might call mad, and the Bible calls it mad, or one of those poor individuals who are born with a mental birth defect to the point of being unable to even rationally think, and so to even care for themselves, these sort of persons can't just be left to wander the streets. I say if they're clearly mad, they're out of their mind. They're born, as we spoke of. You can't just let them wander the street. We see that, and they're confronting people, and they're hurting people, and they're not taking care of themselves, and so forth. Also, persons who literally make threats of murder and mayhem need to be on the radar screen of police authorities and informed of the same, and being warned of what they're contemplating and the consequences. But to write all mass murderers off as being mentally ill, the question is, what's the standard for that classification? I mean, how many do they have to kill? How many? What's a mass murderer? Is it more than six? More than two? More than 10? I mean, this is all subjective reasoning. And if numbers killed is the measure, then would mass murderers be exempted in those states where there's capital punishment from capital punishment, and the person that kills one, murders one, he's done to death by the state, and this one over here that killed 10, he's not? I mean, there's a lot of issues here. And further, over the course of time, more often than not, we have seen the neighbors and friends of serial killers. In the past, there were more what we'd call serial killers, and they are mass murderers. They just stretch it out. We have seen the neighbors be be amazed when the killers found out and brought to justice. They say, well, he was so nice, or she was so nice. Good neighbor, hard worker even. So this business of writing this all off as mental illness and saying, well, just involuntarily incarcerate, so to speak, is a very dangerous thing. Up until recently, no criminal was considered mentally ill, except those who could be proven not to have the capacity to understand, clearly understand right from wrong at all, and could not reason rationally, and obviously didn't even know what they were doing. Otherwise, they were held accountable for their crime. They weren't considered mentally ill. And as for the suggestion that the government preempt crime by gathering information on citizens and then judges look it over and declare certain ones to be potential criminals based on a finding of mental illness, quote unquote, and then involuntarily confine that person, whose standard is used for that? Whose standard? I mean, the criminal in the latest school shooting didn't apparently show any sign of being mad or deranged. And I say deranged in the true sense of the word. Couldn't even rightly reason. He planned it out, didn't he? He planned out every step of the way. He had no history of obvious true mental illness. He dressed strange. He dressed in black. But look around at the way people dress today. You're going to have to put a lot of people away if you go by that. He was the product of the government school system. I understand he had a broken home or came from one. And quite frankly, he was the product of a growing heathen culture. If the government's going to begin a campaign of involuntarily committing individuals based on the standard of supposed mental illness set by the politicians in power or a given district attorney of this particular state, of course, with the advice of liberal psychiatrists or shrinks, as we once called them, what about true Christians? Aren't we considered mentally ill because we believe in the virgin birth? Aren't we considered mentally ill because we refute evolution and believe in creationism? Don't some consider us mentally ill, mentally deficient? They do. And with regard to many of the doctrines of our faith and all the miracles that the Lord Jesus performed and so forth, we're considered mentally ill, mentally deficient. What about those of us who hold to the scriptural teaching on homosexuality? We're potentially dangerous. We must be mentally ill. That's what they say. Mad. Just remember, this is a very old tactic by our great adversary through wicked people. John 10:19-20. There was a division, therefore, again among the Jews for these sayings. And many of them, speaking of Christ now, said, he hath a devil and what? Is mad. Why hear ye him? They judged him mad. What about Paul before Festus? Acts 26:24-25, the verses. And as he thus spake for himself, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, thou art beside thyself, much learning doth make thee mad. But he said, I am not mad, most noble Festus, but speak forth the words of truth and soberness. What does mad mean in those two texts? A maniac. A maniac. That's mental illness. But they were both. The Lord Jesus was accused of being a maniac, mad. And so was the Apostle Paul. What do you think? Are we greater? Is a servant greater than his master? You think Christians would just not be targeted? What are those Christians who have very large families? Those who homeschool, those who believe husbands are to be the head of the family as well as the provider and protector of the family. To the liberal leftists, including in some counties, liberal social workers, such parents are potential abusers. They're raising children to have warped minds who are potentially dangerous criminals. Preemptive action must be taken. Just declare them mentally ill. That'll take care of it. What about those who don't agree with any number of things? Global warming. You know, I could show you, and you may have read them, literally statements by university professors and others who have already said the people that do not fall in line and agree with man-made, we would say, man-made global warming, they're mentally ill. They should be locked up. They're endangering the world. But we could also think of, we won't go on and on here, but what about the flat earthers, including some Christians? Now, it is beyond me how anyone could be so deluded, but they're not all mentally ill. And we could go back to the COVID outbreak and some of the craziness and some of the conspiracy theories with regard to, oh, the doctors are killing people by putting them on ventilators and this, that, and the other thing. They weren't crazy. They were wrong, I believe. We have talked about that. We won't talk about it today. But they, people like that weren't mentally ill, and they had a right to say what they wanted to say, even if we believe it was not right in the general sense. Totalitarian governments have a history of declaring those they deem to be misfits and enemies of the state to be mentally ill and locking them up, especially Christians. For instance, in the atheistic Soviet Union. Yet, here we hear this outcry on the political conservative right for involuntary institutionalization of any and all the government deems to be mentally ill and potentially then a criminal. Republican governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. He said this, my hope is laws passed that I will sign addressing health care in this state. There are an array of health issues that relate to those who commit gun crimes. So anyone that commits a gun crime has a health, mental health issue. What about knife crime? What about baseball bat crime? What about personal responsibility? At the NRA convention held this past week, Donald Trump sang the same song. I guess he forgot that during his term as president, many on the left insisted he was mentally ill and a criminal, so much so they wanted him removed from office, investigated, and locked up. But Trump's just one of many on the right who have decided this is the answer to violent crime in our nation. Mentally ill, those who commit gun crimes are mentally ill. So what about the vast cheering crowds in the Roman Colosseum who cheered and laughed as our Christian brethren were done to death in terrible ways, including being eaten alive by ravenous beasts? Were they very, very evil people, products of that dark, depraved heathenism, or were they just mentally ill? Were they just mentally ill? What about the multitudes who gathered in Paris and other French cities during the French Revolution to watch men and women being guillotined on raised platforms as they cheered and laughed? Were they mentally ill? Or were they evil? And products of a heathen culture? What about the crowds who gathered to watch faithful children of God? Men, women, girls and boys burned to death by the papists during the time of Antichrist power. What about the cannibals of the New Hebrides who killed John Williams and other missionaries, even as they murdered and ate each other and did all sorts of horrible, violent crimes? One missionary had a chief speak to him of his preference for eating little children because they were so tender. Were they all mentally ill? Apparently not, because when the gospel came and the light of the gospel and multitudes were saved, that was abandoned and they were ashamed of themselves. They had no light there. What about the Ustashi in the Balkans, the SS units and the Gestapo units? What about during World War II? What about the Soviets in Germany with what they did? What about the massacre of multitudes in Rwanda by machetes and other weapons? Close to a million, somewhere between 600,000 and a million Tutsis were done to death by the Hutu. What about the Orthodox Muslims today? Do we just write off all this cruelty and brutality as mental illness? Those who ascribe every brutal crime such as mass murder to mental illness deny the fallen nature of man and the depth of cruelty and depravity to which he is able to go and which heathenism is known by. We do not speak proudly in saying this. We too were born the fallen children of Adam. If we were blessed to live in a time where there was more savor of the gospel yet, and there still is some now, and we did not go the route of some of the ones we spoke of, it's no glory to us, but glory and honor to the Lord. As for mass murders, clearly in the short run, we don't deny there's a need for better security at schools, churches, hospitals, other places, and large outdoor gatherings. And citizens do need to report persons who literally boast of having plans to do murder and mayhem. But law enforcement and citizen vigilance can only do so much, and violence will only increase until this nation is either a total police state with surveillance everywhere or our beloved land experiences a spiritual awakening. That brings us to the heart of the matter, this subject. Rather, it takes us to the heart of fallen man, which is the heart of the matter. Jeremiah 17, the verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? That's the fallen heart, the corrupted heart of fallen man. Mass shootings, violence of all sorts is of the nature of fallen man, nurtured also by, in this country, by poor, often wretched, even non-existent parenting, who themselves are the product of the same, those parents, not that there's any excuse. And then there's all the cultural influence that we know of and we won't go through, though there's still personal responsibility, and the law of God is still written in the heart, the conscience bearing witness. But it has to be admitted that our nation's people are on the Romans 1 road. Aside from the fact that there are yet a great many Americans who, though not Christian, nevertheless are honest and honorable and decent men and women, but many of them, as honest, honorable, and decent as they may seem, have that libertarian view we spoke of. Homosexuality, it doesn't affect me, so it's fine, I don't care. Live and let live, it's not hurting anything, and on and on and on. We're on that Romans 1 road. We're going down it further every year, and each generation more so than the one before it. And this is proof positive that the church, other than a shrinking remnant, has lost her savor and is no longer the light of the world, a city set on a hill. Again, we'll speak on that next week, Lord willing. We want to turn to Romans 1 briefly. We want to speak on that next week, the church. And the deception that we Christians can trample underfoot the word of the Lord with those things we feel like trampling underfoot. Fundamental scriptural truth and right practice even. And the Lord will be pleased to use us as the instrumental means of a spiritual awakening in the land. I believe that's diluted, that sort of thought. Romans chapter 1, let's just read it. It's very familiar to you, I know. For the wrath of God, starting in verse 18, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Just as we all were, but this speaks of a nation without the light of the gospel, a people even, and what happens then, without the savor of a faithful gospel church in it. This speaks of where mankind always goes. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like the corruptible man, into birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Now, here is where we begin a description of a growing segment of our population. And then much of the rest of the unsaved world is just somewhat behind this particular segment and models some of the same characteristics. But then there are those that are, this clearly describes them right where they're at already. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, that is fit, proper. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy. Think of our nation. Murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection. Covenant breakers, we think even of divorce, don't we? As belonging to that even. But without natural affection. That shooter in Texas first shot his own grandmother. Natural affection means affection for parents, children, grandparents. That's something, that's a natural affection. Nowadays, there are animals that show more natural affection for their young than some people do. Is that surprising? Because man can fall below the level of beasts in cruelty and depravity. Implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God that they which commit such things are worthy of death. That means everlasting death in hell. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And so we see that, and we see it more and more, and have pleasure in them that do it. I have heard so-called, or I guess they're conservative Christian radio hosts, laugh at things that ought not to be laughed at, but condemned. I heard a woman, conservative talk show host that's very big in our state, laugh about, we'll just call it a naturist beach, where children were even taken. She thought it was funny. But Romans chapter 1 speaks of the whole man, his mind and heart, intellect and thoughts, feelings, emotions, all corrupted. And it is to the point then eventually where evil is good and good is evil, self is all important. They serve the God of self in this world. And then in time many become past feeling, such as Ephesians chapter 4, verse 19 speaks of, and even with seared conscience. They serve the God of this world, I say, of whom Christ said, the thief cometh not but to steal and to kill and to destroy. To steal in so many ways and to kill and destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. We had a couple of incidents the last few weeks in Wisconsin that really are a sign of the times. Do we know the sign of the times? A group of children, ages 5 to 11, broke into a school in Madison, I believe it was. They vandalized the school, 5 to 11. And I don't want to get graphic. Let's just say they used the school as a toilet. I'll put it that way. Now, these are very young children. These poor children have been discipled in heathenism. They have been mentally, spiritually, emotionally abused. But then again, these younger ones, they're not even the age of accountability. The older ones, they do need to be disciplined. There is personal responsibility, and as people become, for instance, as old as the next boy I'm about to tell you about, they need to suffer the consequences of their crime. Another incident in Wisconsin lately. This is why we had the children leave. A 14-year-old boy raped and killed a 10-year-old girl. I say this is one of the reasons we had the children leave. Think about that. raped and killed a 10-year-old girl. He had no empathy. He had no mercy for that crying little girl. He just did what he felt like doing. He should be held accountable. But that's heathenism. That's heathenism. That is the depths of heathenism. That's where our country is headed. Let me give you another example. It wasn't in recent weeks, but it wasn't so long ago. A young man in a town near here, or from a town near here, not so far away, a small town, fathered a child with a young girl. I don't remember all the details, but he made some excuse that he was going to take the child somewhere. Well, he actually took that little infant out into the woods and left that infant to die. As he was walking away, the infant cried. So he came back and shot the baby. He came back then with a gun and shot the baby to death. Again, he needs to be held accountable for his crime. But the church needs to wake up and see where we're at and start understanding that this is only going to get worse. It needs to begin with the church. There needs to be a repenting, a seeking God, a crying out, a going back to the old paths. No, that young man, he has the law of God written in his conscience yet, or the conscience bearing witness, the law written in the heart. He's accountable. But he is a product, too, of this culture. No, he wasn't mentally ill. He was evil. He was just plain evil. We don't say that in any arrogant way, putting ourselves up on a pedestal, I hope. But like I say, the church, we need to go back to the church. We who have the light of the Lord, the light of the gospel, we say we have new hearts. Well, then we ought to examine ourselves, examine our church, examine all Christians should at this point in time. Compare their doctrine and their practice to the Word of God and pray about it. And stop playing these games, this foolish game. Stop trampling the Lord's Day underfoot, for instance. Let's start there. Psalm 8, the verses 4 and 5. What is man that thou art mindful of him? The son of man that thou visitest him. For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels and hast crowned him with glory and honor. It is incredible what the Lord has done. He has visited us. He sent his son to save us from our sins, to make us his children, and to bring us home to everlasting glory, holiness, gladness. Man was made a little lower than the angels. And yet, apart from the restraining, preserving influence of a faithful, witnessing church throughout the nation, man will inevitably sink lower than the beasts. That's the reality of it. And that's a general rule of all mankind. The state of the church is what dictates the state of the nation in the long run. Again, ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is henceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world, a city set on a hill cannot be hid. What is the state of the evangelical church in America? The churches who testify to holding to the faith once delivered unto the saints. Do we? Do churches? Is that the general rule today? Many Christians are going to be caught up in arguing and debating about gun control and this and this and that and this. But they won't talk about the church. They won't look to themselves. They won't say, what is our responsibility in all of this? Have we had a hand in bringing about these vicious crimes? Have we had a part and causing our nation to go deeper into heathenism because we have not been the salt of the earth, the light of the world, a city set on a hill? God expects us to ask that question and look to the scriptures for the answer. As we continue on making our way toward the root cause of the moral degeneration in our land and the increasing cruelty and brutality in our nation, we are going to speak on a number of things. Yes, we will speak about revival and spiritual awakening in the land. But I also am going to first turn our attention to the so-called conservative right, which has by and large become the conservative libertarian right, since a great many Christians are of that segment of the population. They are turning into what that movement is preaching and teaching, if not outright, in some cases outright, and certainly in other ways. And they're being so greatly influenced by its leaders and talk show hosts, and those Christians, in turn, are influencing the rest of this nation. It's a very serious thing. So many Christians are just, they're more, quote, conservatives than they are Christians. And so we want to talk about that. And we want to talk about that degenerating standard of what constitutes morality, decency, honor, even righteousness. Now, we have much to talk about. And we ask the Lord to help us, because we all need to take to heart the word of the Lord and what we are to be. We can point at the world all day long, but we better start considering our duty, what we're to be. Because apart from faithful church, there is no other salt and light in a nation. And I can't close this message without some encouragement. So I want to turn to Psalm 46 and just read that for our close. These certainly are troubling times. And certainly those who seek to be of a faithful remnant are perhaps very troubled, because it's not just the nation. We see so many poor little children, the way they're being raised, and we see all this cruelty and depravity, and but we also see an evangelicalism that is just a part of the problem, really, not the answer. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. God will yet be exalted among the heathen. He will yet once again be exalted in the earth. The question is, what will his church be in this generation? Will she be used of him for even a great spiritual awakening? Or will she be but an obstacle to such an awakening and bring not only more misery to this country and more brutality by extension, but also chastisement from the Lord on herself, that she might in time be cleansed and purified that way by fire, and then be used for a great awakening. Amen.